Welcome back to Romance Ever After. I am your host, Allie, and today I have with you, I forgot to ask you, do you want me to call you Erin or Rachel?
You can do both. Either one, like, is fine. You can say, like, Erin Sterling, you know, pen name of Rachel Hawkins.
Okay.
If that's, you know, but either way is fine.
Okay. All right. Everybody just heard that. So we are talking to Erin Sterling, who is also known as Rachel Hawkins, the New York Times bestselling author of multiple books for young readers. Her work has been translated in over a dozen countries. She studied gender and sexuality in Victorian literature at Auburn University and currently lives in Alabama. Welcome, Erin/Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me, Allie. Just Allie.
I'm really excited to have you. I think, like, the first time I ever ran into you online, it was during one of your, like, epic threads about English history, which, you know, is not necessarily my favorite thing in the world, but you make it so interesting. So thank you for those.
Oh, thank you. They were so fun to do. I need to get back into doing them, but, like, they would eat up, like, my writing mojo for, like, the entire day. I was exhausted at the end of it. So I was like, okay, I wrote today. I hadn't, actually.
I can imagine. They were epically funny, and, like, so much goes into them. So yeah, I understand having to put that aside, especially considering all you've been working on in the last few years. I can understand why you had to put that to the side for a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about you. So I love to talk to my guests and find out what their romance, what their love story is with romantic comedies. Like, how did you start to fall in love with romantic comedies? Because I'm just assuming you love them if you're talking to me.
Right, exactly. No, I absolutely did. You know, I was always a kid that loved, like, any kind of romance. Like, even when I was, like, really little, I was the person that always wanted, like, there to be more kissing in cartoons. Mm-hmm. You know, my friends would be like, well, there's just not, like, a love story in this one. And I was like, then I'm kind of bored. Like, if I don't have, like, a ship, I can't, like, get invested. It was, like, started really young for me. So I loved, when I was, like, the youngest one that I remember is Can't Buy Me Love. Because I was probably, like, 7 or 8 when that movie came out. It's, like, so problematic now. I'm sure that large portion, like a lot of the romantic comedies of the 80s and 90s, you go back and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't know the premise, Can't Buy Me Love is, like, a guy pays a girl to pretend, the cool girl, he's a nerdy guy, she's a cool girl, basically pays her to pretend to be his girlfriend and make him cool, and then they fall in love. So yeah, it's, like, problematic kind of right there in the premise, really. He kind of blackmails her because he does pay her, but, like, she needs the money because she's ruined this fancy white leather suit of her mom's that she was wearing. So she needs the money for the dry cleaning. So yeah, he kind of holds it over her head. So yeah, it's very problematic, but it was fake dating though, you know? And so I was super in. There was another one called Happy Together, weirdly enough, also with Patrick Dempsey.
I love Happy Together.
I loved that movie.
I love that so much.
And nobody watches it anymore. Like, I don't even know if you can find it anywhere.
I found it. I found it maybe it was this spring, like this past spring. I found it online somewhere, and I was very shocked to find it, because I hadn't seen it in, like, almost a decade. But I used to jam with that. I had a secret hope of also having a roommate switch up.
Exactly. I want a roommate mix up where I, you know, find the love of my life. So yeah, that was, oh man, that was such a good movie. I'm going to try to track it down now. So yeah, it really kind of started there with, like, those, my kind of younger, like, Happy Together is college, Can't Buy Me Love is high school. So those kind of, like, but younger romantic comedies, I guess. I even loved, like, Mannequin, which I guess counts as a romantic comedy.
Oh, hells yeah. Yeah.
So I was obsessed with that movie. So yeah, it's been there, like, from really, really young.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I didn't even realize that Mannequin existed, because I think when I was a child, Mannequin 2 had come out, and right. Like, that was, like, all they would play on TV. And then one day on, like, a Sunday afternoon matinee, there was Mannequin, and it wasn't the same people, and I was very confused, but I loved it just the same.
It's so good. It also is problematic in places now, because I did rewatch that one recently and was like,
but looking at things from then with a current eye can be
exactly.
Okay, so I've already heard one trope you kind of dig. So you like fake dating. Are there any other tropes you like? And I like to switch this up with writers. Are there tropes that you can only like read or watch versus ones you write?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Cause yeah, I love fake dating as a trope. I love second chance romance. There's something so fun to me about like people who used to be in love who aren't anymore, who have to like re-navigate that. And so I really, really love those. And as far as like, there are definitely things that I would rather read other people write and I don't really want to tackle myself. I actually tried to like tackle the grumpy one and the sunshine one. And it turns out like I'm not very good at that because I don't like the grumpy one. Like when I write it, like I've just always kind of written slightly more it's lighter, I guess, kind of like guys, especially in my romance stuff. So I'm good at the stuffy one. Like I love a kind of like rule following kind of, you know, I like that, but I'm not very good at the grumpy one, but there are so many authors who like do it so brilliantly. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to leave that to the professionals. Cause like I'm never good at that, but yeah, but Hidden Chance is the biggest one I think for me in terms of like what I like.
Cool. Okay. Well, with all that, let's dig into today's movie. So today we are talking about one of my all-time personal favorites, Practical Magic.
So good.
So good. like, I didn't even really have to rewatch this because I've watched it so many times, but I rewatched it anyway because I had an excuse to rewatch it.
Yeah, exactly.
So Practical Magic came out in 1998. It was based on the 1995 novel by, what's her name, Alice Hoffman. And that novel was like pretty big. People really liked it. And it was adapted by several people. The first person to take a stab at it was Robin Swycord. And I actually own both the drafts of this because I am just that obsessed with this movie.
Oh, I love that.
So I own the Robin Swycord draft. And then I own the draft that Akiva Goldsman got his hands on. And the Robin Swycord draft is like way closer to the book than the movie.
Right. Because the book is like, I reread the book a couple of years ago and was like, it's a little bit darker, like heavier.
It's way heavier.
Yeah, than I remembered, and way heavier, yeah, than the movie.
Yeah, the movie is really whimsical and light, and that's part of why it wasn't like such a huge success in the box office. Like it gained a cult following. If you ever look at the trailers that they put out for it, you can tell they had no fucking clue how to market this, because like they're trying to market it as a rom-com, which we can debate this later, but this movie is not a rom-com whatsoever.
I would agree with you.
But they're trying to market it as a rom-com, but it's not, and they don't know how much magic to plug or not, and it's just and when you see the movie too, it makes sense because this movie is all over the place, but in the best ways.
It somehow still works, even though, yes, I agree, like tonally, like I actually like sometimes forget that like there's basically a murder in it.
Twice.
Because it's actually like the main thrust of the plot. But like, if you just sort of think of like Practical Magic, you don't necessarily think of like, and then they hide the body in the garden and stuff. You know?
Yeah. So this whole movie like just has so much crazy stuff about the background of it. One of my favorite things about it is that Barbara Streisand tried to buy the house.
Oh my God.
She tried to buy their house. However, the house isn't real. So what happened was they built the outside of it, like the really big facade of it, on an island, I think like just off of, Washington. And like, that's where they did all the outside shooting. Like when the girls throw the maple syrup over the cliff and all that stuff, that's where they did all the outside shooting. However, if there's nothing inside, everything on the inside was on a soundstage, and it was actually built by an actual interior design firm, and they're still working today. Like, if you go on their website, they still have like all the shots and stills from when they were
playing. Oh, that's so cool.
But like, it was so realistic that like people actually wanted to buy it, and Barbara Streisand wanted to buy the house. And they were like, I'm so sorry, Babs.
Like, she's got like a mall in her house, so I feel like she didn't need to have this as well. Like, yeah, you know, don't you? But she still kind of deserves it though.
Yeah, I mean, that is Barbara Streisand. The woman who gave us A Mirror Has Two Faces deserves everything.
That is a rom-com right there. That is a solid one.
Oh, solid. Okay, so they were actually cursed by a real witch at one point. Let's see. Sandra only made this movie because Speed 2 bombed so badly. They really got drunk during Midnight Margaritas. Like, everything about this movie, like, I just absolutely adore it, from the actual movie to like the background. Like, it's just and then like has like the best soundtrack.
Oh god, the soundtrack is so good. I had it in college. I actually saw this movie in college, like in the theater. Mm-hmm. So I would have been a freshman in college in 1998, and my friends and I remember like going to it, and like afterwards we were like, we're gonna all live together in a house and we're gonna do Midnight Margaritas every night. And I think we didn't all live together in a house ever. Like, they moved in together and I had moved in with someone else. And I think we did like Midnight Margaritas in their apartment once. And it just wasn't quite the vibe in their like small built-in 1995 apartment kitchen.
You can't dance around kitchen island and like prefab. Like,
we put song on and everything. I don't really like margaritas, it turns out. They're okay. So.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about the movie.
Yeah.
And not just around the movie. Yeah. Okay, so the movie starts out with which one is Diane West? She's Aunt Jet. So Aunt Jet and Aunt Frances are talking to Sally and Jillian about the history of their family. And it starts out with Maria Owens, who was a young witch who is supposed to be executed by the town as a witch, you know, as you do in New England in the past.
Classic trope.
Yeah, classic. You know, they're executing her, of course, because she apparently slept with like half the town's husbands as well. But, you know, she makes a wish and she's saved because, you know, she is a witch. And like that kind of just sort of kicks off the spell of like all the women in the Owens family being doomed to lose the men that they love the most. And, you know, after she dies, it like goes down the generations. And that's essentially what happens to Sally and Jillian's parents. Her mother loved her father so much that he ended up dying, I think it was in a car crash, and her mother died of a broken heart. Right. And at that moment, Sally is like, this shit isn't happening to me. Hell no, there's no way I'm gonna let a man take me down like that. Jillian, on the other hand, is like, give this to me, let's go, let's do this. and so, you know.
Tragic love. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want to feel the burn that badly. The girls, after their parents die, they go to live with their aunts who, you know, they have chocolate cake for breakfast. There's no bedtimes. They can do whatever they want. They learn about magic and all the charms that they possess. Aunt Frances and Aunt Jet, they actually are witches, practicing witches, and like all good small towns, when you have a practicing witch, the women of the town and the people in general of the town know to go to them for help. Even though they are spurned by society, you know, you want to get something done, you go to them.
Right.
So the girls are shooed away because they have a client who comes over, and the client wants a spell cast on a man that she was having an affair with. He dumped her and she just wants him to come back to her, and she'll do anything to get him back. And so they cast a spell, and you know, that's cemented it for Sally. She never wants to like be that possessed about love ever again. So she herself decides to go and cast a spell for an impossible man who she would love with all her heart. And like one of those things that she can't do is she can't lie to him. He would carry a symbol of a star. He would know how to ride a horse backwards. He could flip pancakes in the air, and he would have one green eye and one blue eye, which
it's such a cute little spell. Like, I love that part of the movie so much.
And I love that touch too, because Aidan Quinn really does have heterochromia. It's perfect. And like, you know, she's walking through the solarium, which I love their solarium so bad, picking off all the flowers and putting it in her little pot. And then she casts her spell into the wind. And, you know, she's like, she's protected her heart. She's never going to get affected and hurt by love. Jillian, on the other hand, has gone the opposite direction. And the next time we see these girls, Jillian is climbing over the banister because she's about to run off with some boy that she's just met and has decided she loves, and Sally is staying back with the aunts. And it's this really, like, Sally's like, what's going to happen to my baby sister, essentially? Like, you know, I'm worried about her. And more importantly, she's also worried about, like, the person she's closest to in the world, because she's cut herself off from love otherwise. The majority of her love is going to this one person. And yeah. Jillian and her, which is it's funny because they're sisters, so they share the same blood anyway, but Jillian still decides that they're going to do this. They're going to cut their hands and they're going to be blood sisters.
Right. Like, you literally already are, like, biologically and DNA-wise, but sure, go ahead.
Your blood is already her blood, but okay, fine, whatever. So they both have these scars on their hands now. That is basically their connection through the world, wherever they are, whatever they do. So Jillian's off running around the world, jumping from man to man. Sally, on the other hand, is just back with the aunts, and all she wants to do is be normal and, like, not be an outcast from town. And she's still cutting herself off from love. But one day, when they're in town, she runs into a guy from one of the produce stands at the market downtown, and he is smitten, very captivated by our young Sally's youth and beauty. And she also seems to be a little smitten too. And so the aunts basically decide they're going to give them a little nudgy poo. Because clearly, you know, we just want Sally to get out of her own head and just, like, actually enjoy being young and, you know, have fun with a guy. And it's this awesome scene because they cast a spell and Sally is steadily working in the garden, like picking out fruits and veggies or whatever. And all of a sudden the clock strikes and she can think of nothing else but running to him. And it's perfect too, because it's playing This Kiss by Faith Hill in the background. And the second she jumps into his arms, like, the whole song just, like, takes off. It's like, it's so perfect. It's so perfect rom-com. Like, I really love that. And she's got, like, the pack of dogs following her.
Yeah. That song was everywhere too, like, after that.
Yes.
That song is so perfect for that kind of big rom-com moment.
Yeah. So, like, and so then all of a sudden Sally's life is perfect. She's got the perfect guy. She's got two daughters, one redhead, one brunette, just like her and Jillian. She doesn't even mind her husband's scratchy beard. She kisses him all the time. And she has what she's always wanted. Sally is now a part of the normal crowd. She's a part of everything. She's no longer an outcast anymore. And that's all she's ever wanted from her life. Jillian, on the other hand, has met a man who is as dark as sin and night. And, you know, she thinks that he might be strong enough to withstand the Owens curse. It's Johnny Angel. And, you know, they don't necessarily, like, fully allude to just, like, how bad he is. They, like, really skirt around it. But she says, like, you know, she drugs him occasionally so she can get out of having sex with him, right, because he's got, like, this crazy sex drive and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But Jillian's down in the Southwest living with Johnny Angel, and Sally is up in the New England area with her happily ever after life. And then that's when she starts to hear the Beatle.
Yeah.
The Beatle that rings the sound that death is coming. And she wants to ignore it. She wants to ignore it. And then one day she can't ignore it anymore. And she is ripping up every floorboard in the house.
I can still like see that scene like so clearly, like all the floorboards everywhere. She's kind of trying to, you know.
Trying to find that beetle and she can't find it. And she's fine because really for the most part, Sally, in her attempt to be normal, she's straight up tried to ignore all the magic in her life, all the magic in her blood, in her history. And she's just trying to be the normal girl. And now she can she can't ignore it anymore. Right. The beetles come, the death knell is coming, the love of her life is going to die. And there's nothing she can do to stop it. And it's really tragic too, because intercut with her like tearing up the floorboards looking for the beetle, we see her husband walking down and we think like, oh, he's about to get hit by a bunch of bikes, but they avoid him.
Yeah.
And he's gonna be okay. And he's avoided it. And then bam, we don't see it on screen, but we see his produce flying everywhere as he's hit by a truck. And Jill and Sally is so devastated. Now she and the girls are gonna go live with the aunts. And, you know, she's has it about herself that just because we're moving back in with aunts doesn't mean we're going to do any of that magic stuff. No chocolate for breakfast. You know, we're still going to be normal. We're just living with these people. And don't give me any of your influence, because basically your influence is what killed the love of my life.
Right.
And you see Sally start to like slide into like sadness and depression and not really wanting to like be a part of her life. You know, she still loves her daughters, but like she really can't force herself to function, to get out of bed, because you know she's dealing with a lot of grief. And Jillian feels it miles and miles away, dealing with her chaotic boyfriend. You know, she feels it. She feels that her sister needs her.
Yep.
So she runs to be with her sister and she gets her out of the funk. And, you know, she's like, you have to be there for your little girls. Don't be like mom was with us. Be there for your little girls. They need you. And that gets her out of bed. And we see her re-interacting with life. She's decided to start this business where she's selling herbal remedies essentially that have a little magic going on with them too.
Right.
And she has her two store helpers who are really lovely people, Margot Martindale and I think it's Chloe Webb. So Carla and Linda are like, they're two people. Linda's a little funky and totally into the fact that Sally's a witch. And Carla's is funky and is into that Sally's a witch, even though Sally doesn't want to mention it. And Linda is just like a nice, normal person who's from the town as well. And so Sally's getting back involved in her life. And then all of a sudden now Sally is figuring out that Jillian needs her. Now that she's back up on her feet, she decides to go and run and be with Jillian, because clearly Jillian needs help. She also got a phone call from Jillian, I think.
That's it. Yeah. That she called and was all freaked out.
Yeah.
He's, you know, hit her or just being awful.
Cause he's an awful human being. And so she hops on the next plane. The aunts take the girls with them to, I think it was like Beltane or something, I can't remember. To a celebration, and she's like, just promise me they won't get naked, because apparently it's a nudity ritual. And so she runs to go be with Jillian, and she's trying to help Jillian get out of where they're staying. And before they can do that, Jillian realizes that she's missing her tiger's eye pendant, and it must be in Johnny Angel's car. So she runs over to the car to like try and get the necklace. But lo and behold, who is in the backseat of the car with a gun? but Johnny, who's like, there's no way you're leaving me.
Yeah, that's what, like, this movie gets dark. Like, you know, all the Johnny stuff is really dark.
Real dark, really dark. And, like, you know, of course, Sally is not going to leave her sister with this guy. So she also gets in the car, too. And they just start driving together. She's doing her best to, like, keep him from, like, harming Jillian more. Because, like, at one point, he's, like, lighting his ring so that he can brand Jillian. Like it's a really dark like 5 minutes. And we see there's this moment where she and Jillian can communicate to each other magically, of course.
Yeah.
And she tells her to get the belladonna out of her purse and to put it into his tequila that he is steadily drinking. And of course she can't see how much belladonna she's putting in there, so who knows? Because then he drinks it and next thing we know he's out. Like he's not just out, he is dead out. And they freak out. It's like, what are we gonna do? They get back to the aunt's house and it's like, okay, well, we're here. There's gotta be a spell. There's gotta be a spell to bring him back. And we know from the aunts, because after Sally's husband died, you know, she requested to bring them back. And they were like, if you bring them back, it's not going to be the same person.
Right. It's a pet cemetery thing. It's, you know.
Yeah. It's like, it's dark magic. It's not going to be the person you love and knew. And, you know, it's worse. And so, but, you know, Sally and Jillian, they're freaked out. They killed a man. You know, we got to bring them back to like try and like rectify this. So they're like scattering through the house, like trying to find all the stuff. At one point, like they're supposed to draw in white on him, a pentagram, and the only thing they can find is spray Ready Whip. And like,
scream all over his.
I don't care how many times I see this, I still get freaked out when she dabs her finger in the Ready Whip off of his dead body.
Oh yeah, it's like,
ew.
No,
thank you. Like, it's bad enough, but like, are we really taking whipped cream off of a dead person's body?
Let's not do that.
So they managed to actually bring him back, but of course, because he's brought back darker and worse, you know, he immediately goes to start trying to choke the living daylights out of Jillian. Mm-hmm. And of course, now we have to kill him again. So two murders within the span of like 5 minutes, we've killed him twice. So now instead of trying to bring him back, we just decided we're going to bury him in the backyard, pretend like this never happened.
As one does, yes.
So they bury him in the backyard and it's like, okay, we're going to be chill. Everything's fine. The aunts will bring the kids back and we'll go on about our business. Instead, what happens is the aunts come back and immediately they know something's up, but they don't know what, because how are you going to fool two witches? Come on now.
Exactly. They're picking up on the vibes.
So, you know, the kids are really overjoyed to see Aunt Jillian in the way that like kids are always overjoyed to see like an adult that they know about, but they don't know.
Right. And Jillian has strong, like fun aunt energy, you know, like.
Yeah, very strong. They're existing okay. Jillian is with Sally. Jillian talks to the aunts and, you know, she's talking about how Sally's life is now. And they're like, you know, Sally, she just wants to be normal. And she's probably off at, you know, phone tree day, you know, where they announce who's on the phone tree and who's at the top of the tree. And Sally's never been at the top, but, you know, it's all she ever wants, because all she ever wants to do is be normal.
Yeah.
So Jillian decides to go crash phone tree day. She goes and crashes phone tree day, and half the room, of course, knows her from her well child high school days. And they're like scandalized by her snake tattoo and like her super random henna tattoo that she has on her boob.
Right. We should add to that, like, Nicole Kidman has like rarely looked hotter than she does in this movie. Like, she is
so hot
in this movie. She's so beautiful.
I think this is like when I fell in love with Nicole Kidman.
I think it's like this and like Moulin Rouge, like, are probably like, and also like the height of her personal hotness, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, this is like maybe like right about before she and Tom officially split too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was before she was like coming. The freedom meme where she's like outside her attorney's office, like, yes. And the sun, oh God.
Like, I always say I personally don't like when like photographers like get in on celebrities' personal moments, but like, right. I'm really happy that was captured and I really yeah. hope she has it hung somewhere in her house somewhere.
And I feel like she's just probably okay with that one. Like, I think she wanted us to have that, I think, yeah. you know?
I personally hope so.
I hope so.
So yeah, so she goes and she actually casts a little magic herself and changes it so that Sally is at the top of the phone tree,
right,
much to the consternation of the smarmy puritanical let's be honest bitch who's yeah. running the phone tree. They so like, you know, Jillian's like, now she's hanging out, she's being a part of the family, she's being a part of the community, and the aunts decide that they are going to get to the bottom of it. And how do they get to the bottom of it but from one of the most iconic scenes of this movie, yep. Midnight Margaritas.
So, great. So, like, honestly, if you don't want to watch this whole movie, like, just find this scene on YouTube. It will, like, it will improve your mood 10 times over, I'm telling you.
Yes, just four women movie, dancing around the kitchen, drinking margaritas, just having fun, letting it loose. And then they all sit down at the kitchen table and they're all drinking tequila shots. And they are just being, it's clear that maybe the aunts have magicked the tequila because they are getting painfully honest. I think at one point Sally calls Jillian a slut.
Yeah.
The aunts said that they had to put molasses in the spell they cast on Sally to get her legs apart.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They are being rude.
Yeah. Everybody. It's, and not just normal tequila rude. You're right. Like magic tequila rude.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden Sally realizes what bottle of tequila it is they're drinking from. And it was Johnny's bottle. And she immediately runs and tosses it into the sink. And the aunts are like, what the fuck is going on? Basically, like, what happened? And Sally's like, you know, there was a problem and we handled it. Yeah. and just like, I'm not so sure you did, because there are roses growing in the backyard, there are toads popping up all over the place. What is going on? Like, you need to tell us what's going on. And she's like, you know, we're handling it. And they're like, you know, you dabble in a magic that you refuse to own up to as being a part of you, and this is what happens.
Right.
So Sally and Jillian go to bed or pass out, whichever, because they definitely drink a lot of tequila. And the aunts decide they're going to leave and leave them to deal with their own mess. They bind the girls, the little girls, with fiber cords so that they're protected. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, they're just saying, you know what, you two need to clean up your own mess. And it's really funny because they leave the kids to deliver the message. And yeah. The youngest, Antonia, she's like, oh, they left a message. Oh yeah, Ye said you need to clean up your own mess. Yeah. And like she says it very enthusiastically and happily yeah. because she has no clue what the hell is
that
on.
Actually means. Yeah, exactly. Oh man. And that's like kind of great trope in those sort of witchy stories too, of like, you know, the older, wiser people have to sort of step aside, like, and get out of the way, you know, too, so that you can learn and grow, mm-hmm. as it were.
Yes. And so after they leave, lo and behold, what shows up the very next second, but one state investigator, Gary Hallett,
Gary been so sexy.
seriously, right? So Gary's from Arizona and he's on the case of Jimmy, who he says and believes is a serial killer. And yeah. The last trace that they found of Jimmy, he found this letter that Sally had written to Jillian about her life, and how she was feeling, and like, you know, kind of being sad and lonely without her husband, and her life with their kid, with the daughters, and living with the aunts. And so he uses that to maybe he can find a trace of Jillian there, because clearly there's no trace of Jillian currently. And so I think partially he's also worried that Jillian was murdered too, and this is another right. death on Jimmy's hands. But instead he finds Jillian, but he also finds Jimmy's car, and trying to figure out what's going on. And then all of a sudden, Sally cannot tell this man a lie. Like, she's trying to lie, and she's tripping and stumbling all over her words. And she's like, she can't do it. And Jillian's like, get it together, basically. Like, do you want to go to jail for murder? And she's expertly, you know, distracting Gary with her feminine wiles, but they're not exactly working, right? Because he's drawn to Sally for some reason.
Yep.
And so they kind of managed to chase him off, but he decides he's going to go investigating about these two Owen sisters in town. And it's this awesome montage of them talking to all the townsfolk about, like, you know, how they kill their husbands and their witches and like all the sinister stuff that the Owens family has been up to in the whole town's history. And he ends up at Sally's shop talking to her two assistants, and, you know, he's kind of like charmed by her, and like he's kind of watching her, and she's like suspicious of him but drawn to him. And there's this really funny interaction she has with this customer who's coming to complain about like some sort of thing that's supposed to help his hair grow, and he's like, as much as I put it on my hair, that the hair just seems to disappear more. And she's like, that's not where you're supposed to put it. Think about it. Yeah. And, you know, he notices how her spoon is stirring itself on its own. And yeah, he's like, what is going on?
What's happening in this here? Thing? Yeah.
And she ends up like managing to talk to Gary on her own. And, you know, while she's still being guarded, she's being as honest with him as she possibly can. And he decides that he's going to come over the next morning to speak to them. And Jillian is like, okay, this is great. We're going to cast a spell to get this man sent away from us. Yeah. And while she's casting the spell with the little girls, because they're going to put something in the syrup that's going to get him to go far, far, far away. Antonia sees the spell that Sally had written when she was a little girl. And, you know, she's curious what this is about. And she says, well, you know, at first Jillian tries to play it off as it being a spell about their dad. And they're like, no, it's not. This is nothing like our father.
Right.
Like, come on now, sell this to somebody else. But then they realize, she explains that, you know, her mommy was just a little girl and she cast a spell for a love that would never exist. And then Gary comes over and he and Sally are talking to each other and they're getting along and they're kind of being friendly to each other, and they seem very comfortable with each other, and they're humming the same tune, and that's what sets Antonia off. She's like, holy shit, this man is humming the same tune as my mom. Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is a sign, this is a sign. Yeah. And so she and Kylie start to like inspect the situation, like, okay, maybe we like Gary, maybe this is the guy for our mom because he can flip pancakes.
Yeah,
like perfectly designed without any kind of form of cactus pancakes that he can flip. Yep. In the air perfectly. And, you know, Antonia sees that he has a badge shaped like a star, his sheriff's badge, and she asks if he can ride a horse, and he's like backwards and forwards, and it's perfect. This is the guy for our mom. And they're having breakfast together, and he's asking questions. And just as Jillian is bringing out the syrup that we know is going to send this man far, far away, the little girls go, oh, no, 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 we are not eating this today. And they take it and they run and they pitch it over the cliff.
And which is, again, like, so, like, wacky hijinks, like, given, again, that earlier we had, like, domestic abuse and murder, and now we have wacky parent trapping, basically.
Yeah, but then, once again, the tone goes down really quickly because... Yeah. There's a ominous toad sitting on a boulder, and of course we're going to go check out the ominous toad. Yep. And what does he do? He spits out Johnny's ring. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh no, what is going on here? like, I thought you didn't see him, didn't know where he was. I don't know what's going on here, but you guys need to come clean or else I can't help you. And I'm going to guess that there was something detrimental to me in that syrup.
Yeah.
So, you know, get your shit together, ladies, because this isn't cool.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, and just as he leaves, Sally and Jillian have a fight, and, you know, she is super upset at her because Sally just wants to tell him the truth. She wants to get it all out there, and she just wants to, you know, handle however the cards may fall.
Yeah.
And Jillian is like, no, don't do that. You're going to ruin your life. You're going to ruin your little girl's lives. But Sally can't help it. She runs off after Gary and she finds him at his hotel room. Yeah. And she's like, I just want to tell you everything that had happened. And when she's there, she sees that he has her letter and that he's read it like a billion and one times. Yeah. And like, has like perfectly folded it back each time. And she's like, why did you read my letter so much? What's going on here? Yeah. He's like, I don't know, what are you talking about? I was just, it's just research for the case. Like, sure, buddy.
Classic.
Sure. And you know, she's telling him the truth, and then he's like, you know, we'll do what we can for you. But then they also find themselves kissing.
Yeah, and it's a really good kiss too. It must be an excellent movie kiss.
He, it's like, no, we shouldn't be doing this. I can't be doing this. And, she runs back home. And when he follows her, does she run back home or do the kids call? The kids call and say there's something wrong with Aunt Sally. I don't know how they figured out.
Yeah.
I think she runs back to her shop, and then it's like the kids call and said there's something wrong with Jillian. And she runs home and he tracks her there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because just as she's gotten home, Jillian is in bed, just like writhing in pain from the fact that Jimmy is inside of her. Mm-hmm. And as she gets closer to her, Gary comes running up the stairs behind her. And Jimmy arises out of Jillian's body. And he's real freaked out at the prospect of what the hell is going on here.
Yeah.
Like there's literally some witchy shit happening.
Yeah.
And he's freaked out, and they think that they finally have casted Jimmy out of everything and he's gone for good. And as they're leaving the house, Gary's like, I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what to do, but we'll settle this. We'll sell this somehow. And then this is when Sally is like really honest with him. It's like, the only reason you're here, the only reason you're drawn to me is, you know, because I wish for you, this isn't real, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And just as Gary is leaving, he stops and he turns. Oh God. And then he says, you know what? I wished for you too.
God.
And oh my God.
So good. It's so good.
Every time I've seen this movie, maybe about 50 times,
yeah,
maybe 100, I don't know. But every time in Quinn says, yeah, I wished for you too, I yeah, feel that in my soul.
It's so good. What is Aiden so, these days? Like, he needs to be
doing
things. I mean, I don't know how old he is now, honestly, but.
The last thing I remember him doing, so he was in Elementary, Sherlock one. So he would, but that was a few years ago now.
Yeah.
Like, what is he? He's 62.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. He's only 62, so he should be doing stuff.
He should be doing stuff.
He's
like courtroom drama or high prestige like HBO show or something. Justice.
Yeah. Fine. So after Gary leaves, Sally goes back into the house and she thinks Jillian is okay, and she goes to give her a hug, and then he like licks the side of her ear and she's like, ew. Okay, so Jimmy is still here, and you know, she tries to distract her, and then she whacks the crap out of her, knocking Jillian out. And just as that has happened, who but so shows up but the aunts.
Yes.
And they were like, oh, we thought our timing was a little bit better.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so we've got to basically have an exorcism here because Jimmy is squatting inside of your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And like haunting her. So what we need is basically a coven. And so what does Sally do? But she activates the phone tree. Yeah,
just such a nice like callback. Such a great moment.
And it's really, and it's really one of those things, like the way they relate the story is like, so Sally starts out with the first person saying like, you know, hey, I know you've heard those like stories about like how my family's a witch, but well, it's true and we need your help. Mm-hmm. And then like as it's like going down the phone tree, you hear people like basically simplifying it into the way that like it's just woman's problems. Like she's got an awful ex. Yeah. And they need our help to get rid of him. And like everybody's had a shitty ex. Everybody can relate to that. Exactly. Like, and that's as simple as it is. Just bring a broom and help us get rid of this ex. Yeah. And it's just, it's women coming together and, you know, as they're preparing and like, again, the tonal shifts in this movie, because like it's this awful evil thing, like this serial killer is squatting inside of your sister, haunting her, possessing her, and so we have to get ready, but they're getting ready for it like it's a party, right? Like the girls are like, nobody's talking to you. Like the girls are running around like happily, like sweeping out the toads and putting up the candles and seeing how their mother. Yeah, it's an exorcism party. Yeah. And like you're moving the furniture around and Jillian is like just strapped to the chair and they're just happily pushing her around, like, yeah. But and then everybody gets there and they all put their brooms together and they work on like saying the spell to get her out, and it's working, but then it doesn't work. And then that's when Sally's like, okay, you know what? The strongest bond here is me and my sister. And so she does what we saw them do earlier on. You know, she says, my blood is your blood, which is our blood, and like slap their hands together. And then it's really what we find out the true story of this movie is about: familial bond and sisterly love and loving each other and not being alone. And because that was kind of the big thing about Maria was all by herself, she had nobody with her. So you know, you're not alone, I'm here with you, I'm here for you. And their hands united, their bloody palms touching breaks the curse, evicts Jimmy out of her body, and everybody is free to live their lives as happily as possible.
Yes.
And so a little later on, we see there is a letter that is sent, and in the letter, it's a letter from Gary saying that, you know, the case of Jimmy Angelov has been closed. We believe that, you know, he died under mysterious causes, but nothing to worry about here, you're perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And so he sends back the ring for some reason.
Yeah, like she like, just they want like a souvenir, like
here's a souvenir of your dead body, which she just tosses into the fire.
Yep.
And you know, you can see she's kind of sad that he doesn't say anything else. Like it's a very formal letter. And she basically says, like, what would you do to Jillian? Like, how would you handle it? Mm-hmm. And Jillian, who's always been gangbusters about love, goes, what wouldn't I do for love?
Yeah.
And so we see her cast a spell, calling him back to her. And so he comes, and it's really funny because like she's, I don't know, in the woods or something in a dress.
Yeah.
When he shows up, right. And she and she just like she comes out, and she comes out of the woods, and he sees her and she sees him, and they kiss. And next thing you know, it's Halloween, and the aunts and Sally and Jillian and Antonia and Kylie, they're all on the roof in witch garb, and it's supposed to be Halloween, and they're gonna jump off the roof, and they all do, and they touch down, and it's happily ever after.
Yeah, it's, and again, it's a very then like Halloweeny cutesy love story type ending, you know, like,
yeah.
And again, we forget about like the murder and possession and so
yeah. Like it's all over the place, but like I adore that movie so much.
Well, again, it's like I said, like the vibes are impeccable, you know, at the end of the day. The vibes carry it through. Really solid performances. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous
everybody
design. Like,
yeah,
these things will hold together.
Yeah, it's sumptuous set design. Like the yeah. the Owens house, like I said, Barbara Streisand, when did you buy it? Right. It's like every room is like fully lived in, like nothing sparse. There's knickknacks all over the place. It looks like a place where magic happens.
Yeah, it's
completely- and you want that in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, let me ask you this. So favorite three things about it and favorite or like least favorite things about it, if there are any of these favorite things.
Yeah. So like favorite, obviously, like I said, it just looks beautiful. Like there's just no, it's got the perfect amount of like witchy vibes. That was a thing that like, when I was writing the XX, like I went back to this movie because I was like, I want this kind of feel like in the interior spaces mm-hmm. that they're in as much as I can do. That's the big thing. I'm a sucker for like a like women coming together type story. So I do. I love that at the end. I love that the phone tree is used to like do an exorcism, and that these women, even who have been like somewhat hostile and all that, still like when the shit goes down, they're like, yes, we'll help. You know, like mm-hmm. I really, really love that element. And then yeah, like Aidan Quinn. Like I'm gonna give it up for Aidan Quinn in this movie, who is very swoony. And was like kind of like the other guy in a lot of movies, like around the time, like, you know, he was like mm-hmm. the brother in Legends of the Fall that nobody wanted to be with because his other brother was Brad Pitt. And you should have Aidan Quinn, clearly. So yeah, those are my three favorite things. The three like least favorite, like again, tonally, it really is all over the place. Like there's no kind of getting away from that. I guess like I think we probably could have gone like a little like deeper into like Jillian maybe, in that like, you know, it's a little lopsided in terms of like who mm-hmm. Corey it is, but that's fine. Like I'm just saying I would have liked more kind of Jillian stuff because I think she's an interesting character. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's kind of it. I don't think I have like a third. Those are the two things I'm gonna stick with. We should have had more Jillian interior life stuff. And,
yeah,
and we should have evened out tone somehow, but I don't think, I think maybe the uneven tone is also kind of part of its charm, weirdly enough.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
no, I agree. The unevenness is definitely a part of its charm, and I do think I think, and I've seen a lot of people complain about this, they cut out Jillian's love story.
Yeah,
but I mean they were also working, and this is the 90s, y'all. This nobody was like sitting down for 2 hours, 2.5 hour movies like we do today.
No, this needed like, to be like a tight 92 minutes. So yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah. Like they, I feel like they pushed it because it's like, I think they pushed it and it's like an hour 40,
okay.
which is a lot for
this kind of, yeah, for this kind of movie.
For this kind mm-hmm. of movie. Yeah. So there really wasn't any room, I think, structurally, to put in a Jillian love story, but I would have loved to have it.
Yeah, same.
I feel like she deserved to know romantic love that wasn't,
yeah,
as extreme as what she did. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah. All right. So with all that in mind, because I think we agree, this isn't a rom-com.
No.
This is a something movie. But yeah. if we were to make it genre romance, what are there any things that you would change to like make it a little bit more that way?
I mean, I definitely think it's got a lot of like genre romance beats. I mean, a lot of the stuff with like Gary and Sally is almost like fated mates, you know, it's very, mm-hmm. it's, you know, drawn together. Which is really cool. So I like that. It does have a traditional happy ever after. So yeah, I don't think, I mean, and even like the dark stuff, like that is still can be a feature of genre romance for sure. You know, some people handle that really beautifully. So yeah, I actually think there would definitely, if we were going to make it like a real rom-com, there would definitely be like way more focus on the romance part of it. I think you would get more time mm-hmm. with Sally and Gary. I think, so, you know, he would be more involved in like the big finale, as it were, you know, mm-hmm. there would be a way to keep him in that, just so that he has like more of a presence there. But yeah, I mean, it comes pretty close. It just can't quite be a rom-com, I think, because of, again, it's the main love story really in the movie is between Jillian and Sally. It is a movie about family love above everything else. So yeah.
Yeah.
Need a little more Gary to make it officially a rom-com and possibly less murder. So.
Yeah. But like thinking about it though, like I don't even think I I mean, I want more Gary, but I don't think adding more Gary, I think adding more Gary would take away from so much that's already in there. So like,
yeah,
maybe this is one of those stories, like, I don't want to make it that, maybe at the end of the day.
Right, exactly. Like, it's actually like, it works best as the kind of story it is, which is that thing about sisterly love and about bonds between women and family and things like that, more so than I think it would as a rom-com. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's perfect the way it is. And I think if it was a rom-com, I don't think we would have loved it as much as we do.
No, today. I don't think so. Like I said, I do. I sometimes think that the uneven tone is really, like I said, part of its charm, you know, like, it's, you need all of that stuff, I think, to add up to the magical soup that is Practical Magic.
Well, let's talk about your practically magical book, The X-Hex.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So The X-Hex also is kind of, I definitely think, like, heavily influenced by a lot of the Practical Magic vibes. You know, when I was first writing it, I was calling it Hocus Pocus, but they fuck, except that I had never seen Hocus Pocus. So I was like, just like, I guess it's like that. But it's way more practical magic. Cause it is, it's, you know, I've got a young witch, Vivi, who, when she's 19, she falls desperately in love with a witch named Reese, and who's visiting from Wales. And it's like, it is that kind of magical, like, they clap eyes on each other at a midsummer revel type thing for witches. And it's immediate, but it burns out hot and fast. They're broken up within like 3 months. And while brokenhearted, she and her cousin, Gwen, who is a very Gillian-esque character in a lot of ways, although not quite, doesn't get involved in so much dark stuff, put a light curse on him while joking around. They don't think that they've actually cursed him. They're just being silly. And, but then when he comes back into town 9 years later, it seems like maybe there's a little bit more to that curse than they thought. And they have to sort of work, Vivi and Reese have to work together to lift said curse as it sort of spreads to the whole town. So, yeah, that's the thrust of that one.
Nice. Well, I've heard a lot of people raving about it. I've just started it myself and I'm enjoying it as well. You. And I love the printed copy because it has all the little cute cats at the front every chapter.
I'm so happy because, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, people, you know that I love cats very much, and I have two black cats. In fact, yes, if I can lift it for you. So I'm showing Ellie that there's one. Oh, he's hiding. He's like in that bed over there. You can sort of,
I can see his ear.
Yeah. So that's Bosworth. but yeah, so, you know, I feel like I got two black cats, and then a year later I was writing a witch romance, and I'm like convinced they're related.
Probably true.
Yeah. So I was really happy to see the little black cats and like the candles and all that. It's a very sort of like Bell Book and Candle, which was like an old movie about witch stuff in the 50s that I really liked when I was a little kid. So it's fun. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, y'all need to check out The X-Hex. I might be partial to the cover because it has teal, which I think Rachel can tell is my favorite color.
It's a good color. Yeah.
but the cover is really cute. And the book is fun and witchy and funny.
It's light. It is meant to be like consumed with like a pumpkin spice latte or whatever, like, you know. Yeah.
Perfect spooky vibes.
Exactly.
All right, well, Rachel, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter and on Instagram, both as at Lady Hawkins. I have an Aaron Sterling Instagram. It's at Aaron Sterling Books, but I think I'm already like moving away from that and just gonna consolidate the Lady Hawkins thing. It just seems to be easier. So, but I am technically there at Aaron Sterling Books on Instagram. So, but Twitter is all Lady Hawkins. So
awesome. Well, be sure to follow Aaron/Rachel. And thank you again for coming on. I had so much fun chatting with you about this great movie.
Absolutely. This was so much fun.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. Be sure to leave a review on the Apple Podcast Store. Also, if you'd like to follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram, you can find it under Rom Ever After on both platforms. And if you wish to just follow me for other randomness, you can catch me at Ali is Writing on both platforms as well. Until next week.